Right, next up, we're going to look at the future of portfolio optimization. And this is our last Tech Talk style presentation before we head over to lunch. So, Nico, you're standing between us and our food. No pressure. Nico is joining us from Satrix, one of our sponsors today. And he is tasked with building out the research capacity of Satrix's factor portfolio and analytics offering, with research aimed at providing insight into how best to utilize factor signal information in a local context. He also works closely with the investment team in providing rebalancing and portfolio construction assistance and in designing bespoke investment solutions for clients. Before joining Satrix, he worked at Prescient Securities, the Bureau of Economic Research, Fairtree, and ASISA, while providing statistical consulting to the South African Reserve Bank and other institutions. He's got a dual master's degree from Stellenbosch and a university in Germany that I will not try to pronounce, after completing a BCom honors degree in mathematical statistics and economics. He is currently reading towards a PhD in quantitative finance at Stellenbosch University and is also a chartered statistician and director of the ICCSSA. He was awarded first place for risk management in the 2020 Financial Mail rankings and achieved second place in the quantitative and analyst category. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up one more time before lunch for Nico from Satrix.
I apologize for keeping you from your lunch. So I'll try to keep it short. I've been notified that I must stop at 5:30, so I will stop mid-sentence if that is required. It's incredibly daunting to speak after someone that just gave a masterclass on public speaking. And if you noticed, the poor bugger that speaks after Gavin, but well done, Gavin. And to all the speakers, I think it's been phenomenal. I don't know about you, but sitting through many presentations typically is a bit of a chore, unless it's as interesting as it's been. So I'm going to try and keep it moderately interesting. I approach this talk with a great deal of epistemic humility for two reasons, right? The first is quite obvious. My title is sexy, and I think it's because I'm primed for putting forward titles that draw people to the breakaway seminar that I typically present at conferences. Although I realized this morning that you have no choice but to listen to me, so might as well have put on the future of accounting practices or anything else. So it's a bit of a facetious title because I do put out quite novel research that me and my co-author have published this year. And so I want to bring that in, and it provides a different perspective to portfolio optimization, which is at the core of what we do. And so terming it future of portfolio optimization was really more following when I saw Anne talking about the future of investments. I thought, let's be facetious and say it is the future of portfolio optimization, although I don't link it back to my research. And then secondly, also, I'm probably in the bottom decile of human intelligence in this room. So that also brings forward a epistemic humility because I'm not an actuary. So yes, with that trepidation, I suppose, let's jump straight into something really simple, a cartoon. So I don't know if Zapiro is still in the room. He might enjoy it. Okay, he's not. So, well, then I might as well skip on. No, this cartoon really, I suppose in a way, it summarizes the motivation for this study that we kicked off a mere 4 years ago. And you can ask, well, why did it take 4 years to write the paper? Well, if you write the paper as a side hobby in between raising three boys, then yes, it takes long. But at least it's a culmination of trying to better understand this problem. In that we're all told portfolio optimization is all about putting your eggs in different baskets, right? You know that concept. In fact, your grandma knows that concept. That is kind of how we define diversification. But it's a terrible definition for diversification because if all your eggs are on the same truck, even though it's in different baskets, that truck overturns and you're stuffed. So what you should really be defining diversification as is you should put your eggs in uncorrelated or different types of baskets, or in baskets that are embedded on different vehicles. So at least have something, in a horse-drawn cart or a helicopter or something else. Don't put all your eggs in different baskets on the same truck. So the concept then is proper portfolio or risk source diversification, not simply N diversification. It's bizarre how we teach students how diversification is about having many sources of returns. No, it's about exposing yourself to many sources of risk. And so your weighted portfolio might actually look slightly different. And it's with this passion, because I'm deeply involved in managing our balance funds as well as within the Greater Sanlam Group, part of the discussion team that put together balance funds that try to match this objective, trying to optimally diversify across sources of risk, which is not always obvious and easy to identify. As some of our speakers have put forward today, there's much to think about when it comes to investing and also how you define an asset class or a source of risk for that matter. So, I think it's probably the organizers decided it's remiss of them not to have a presentation with some math, some technical stuff. So I do apologize, but you have lunch to look forward to after I'm speaking. So you can digest this after. But I'll here and there have some technical areas, but I promise you all the math is contained in an appendix in the paper I'll reference at the end. I'm not going to bore you with math. But really, when it comes to portfolio optimization, it's typically defined as a very simple quadratic programming exercise, right? In other words, we try to, minimize risk and maximize return subject to some constraints. That's very simple. I don't know if you've seen those yes, but memes, but yes, but sensitivity to measurement error, right? Your covariance is extremely, extremely noisy. Returns have very, very low forecasting power. I mean, you can't get around this, right? This is absolute reality. It's baked into the typical distribution of asset returns that you're working with. And this is a particularly concerning element that the covariance matrix is extremely noisy. Now, risk parity or vol-based techniques somewhat solve this by focusing on the more forecastable covariance part. So the second moment is actually quite persistent. If a company is amongst the most volatile, it will likely be amongst the most volatile next year. If a company is a top-performing company, it will likely or likely not. It depends. It absolutely randomly oscillates between a top performer and a bottom performer. But volatility is extremely persistent. And so what you have is a lot of these vol-based optimizers actually do incredibly well. And it's actually incredibly hard to outperform them, frustratingly hard, that simple optimizers are actually quite good simply because they use information that's persistent. But if our goal is to actually properly diversify across sources of risk, then these actually fall flat a bit. So we also, when it comes to the second moment, unfortunately run into Markowitz's curse, or I think of it as Markowitz's irony, because the idea is that if you add more correlated stocks, you need more diversification. So it's almost like, if you think about a simple regression, you add more variables, you add n, and you have a higher degree of certainty that your outcome is correct, right? You want more n. Well, the problem is in finance, you add more assets that are correlated, and your degree or the need for diversification actually increases. So it's a curse, but it's actually an irony. By adding more, the need for diversification increases. And we never get away from this, right? So the last few years, we've seen correlations spike. And so the problem is in our balance funds, we have a cohort of assets that we keep adding to that are correlated. And so the need for proper diversification actually increases. So just some background again. You have your optimizers on this side, and you can start with the simplest one, equal weight, right? No brain power involved, very simple. This is what you're sort of putting your eggs in different baskets. This is the optimal way to do it, right? 1/n, that's great because you're just spreading your weight across the most assets possible. The problem is you're probably going to be concentrated to certain specific risks. So if you have 100 stocks, 98 of them are highly correlated. Well, 1/n is actually a very undiversified portfolio. Then you start adding risk. So naive risk parity, for example, inverse variance. Like I mentioned, these are actually quite hard to outperform on an outsample basis, simply because they are using an information set that's quite persistent. Then you start adding co-risk, covariance structure, or correlation structure, and this is where the risk source diversification element potentially comes in. Now you're building more robust portfolios, but also the problem is as you're moving down this scale, you're adding complexity and you're adding estimation risk. So even though this is simple, not complex, and there's no estimation risk, the problem is by adding, and it's Occam's razor, I suppose, right? You add complexity for the sake of it. You're not doing anyone a favor. But there's some element, some goodness in adding these components to risk, co-risk, as well as then hopefully adding a measure of return forecastability, at least allowing the fund managers to add their value as well into the process of design. And so where you are on the spectrum, and of course this is not you know, exhaustive. I know Emlyn will balk at the idea if I say this is the scale of optimization algorithms. There's much more, right? But you can broadly categorize it as adding either more complexity in these domains. Now, managing risk is at the heart of any optimization. I would argue it's at the heart of anything a fund manager should do, right? So the key step in optimization is reducing covariance noise while preserving signal. I suppose that's a very uncontroversial statement, right? You want to have more signal, you want to have less noise. Now, how this is typically done is through bootstrapping techniques, for example, or shrinkage methods, you know, Ledoit-Wolf type, or Ledoit-Wolf type shrinkage, if you remember from your studies, I suppose. Factor-based regularization and covariance regularization using deep learning autoencoders. Epic literature, but very complicated. And so this is where you run into the problem where, yes, you're shrinking or you're applying shrinkage, i.e. reducing noise, amplifying signal. But here's a trick. What is noise? Context matters. And so I would argue for a lot of these optimizers, even though they are incredibly advanced, I mean, this is at cutting edge of machine learning application in finance. The problem is your identification of signals actually quite arbitrary. And I'll get to that a bit later. So the two problems with typical covariance noise reduction, because remember that is the key step to constructing a portfolio, generally you're not able to deal with nonlinear risk sources too well. So suppose you have this diagram, then, you know, what is it? Does it look like this or this from a different perspective? And so changing your perspective on a problem, you know, if I show you this, it's a black dot. Now you can see it's a clicker, right? But if you close one eye, it's just a black dot. So where you look at from the perspective that you look at a problem actually determines how you understand it. And the problem is optimization is fundamentally a multidimensional problem at the heart of it. And this won't be solved using simple shrinkage. At least partially you might solve it, but you might be lucky as well. And so we have to be more intentional what perspective we're taking when we are trying to neutralize noise. And so, you know, separating noise from signal is generally separated from a global optimizer goal. Okay, I want you to sort of look at that, you know, briefly internalize how bizarre that is actually. So while there's no doubt that separating noise from signal is absolutely critical, again, Ledoit-Wolf came out with a paper basically saying, you know, honey, I shrunk the covariance matrix. Thou shalt not just apply a covariance matrix straight as is. There's noise, deal with the noise, end of story. No debate, okay? The problem is, should your identification of what is noise not be governed by a global optimization goal? So think of this. Typically, we have distributional assumptions, whether that's opaque in a machine learning algorithm or whether that's from a textbook definition. Then we apply our shrinkage, i.e. using those base assumptions, we apply our ability to separate noise from signal, and then we pass that on to an optimizer. So this is the typical approach. But shrinkage should be done with ultimate goal of maximizing returns, and this might differ completely if your goal is to maximize diversification or to minimize risk. So what is it that you're trying to achieve when you are reducing noise and amplifying signal? What do you want to achieve? And so, you know, I was talking to Emlyn before. I was thinking about an analogy to explain this because, you know, this is a statistical concept, but we apply it in our daily lives, right? If I tell you tomorrow it's raining, okay? Now, here's the thing. If you're going to watch Barbenheimer, then, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's information, but it doesn't really matter. But if it's your wedding tomorrow, it probably matters. So the context provides, you know, the context creates importance to the statement or the information that you get. Secondly, the source of where that information is coming from matters as well, doesn't it? So if you're being told tomorrow it's raining by a meteorologist, you'd probably believe it. If my four-year-old told you it's raining tomorrow, you might go, that's sweet, you know, but probably not true. So why we apply perspective to things in life and understand that concept, but seldomly do so in optimization, is actually a bit of a puzzle. So the question is, can co-risk information be better utilized with a global goal in mind? So let's try and argue for squeezing more juice out of the covariance estimator. So is there a way to better filter noise in a way that takes cognizance of global objectives? Can we more fully utilize the information contained in the covariance matrix, i.e. can we have a three-dimensional view of our covariance matrix? 5 months, okay. Still have a lot to do, so I'll try. can we build proper diversification? So Can clustering help? Now, there's many ways. I'm just going to discuss one area of a very broad field where we applied our sort of tried to add something to the literature in terms of understanding. So clustering is actually a fantastic, you know, unguided machine learning tool where it identifies sources of risk. And as the tree grows, it's a very simple concept. As the tree grows, it starts to cluster together assets. It puts assets into little baskets, saying, okay, you guys are similar, you guys are similar, you guys are similar, but at different layers, you see? So your INL and INP, basically the same thing, they are the lowest cluster. In other words, they very tightly correlate. And as you move up, this correlation starts to branch out. Now, it's a complicated concept for how this is calculated comparatively, but the point is, this structure is useful information that we can easily calculate. Now, the problem is, the problem is your simple mean variance optimizers, that's the bulk of how optimization is done, has no cognizance of this hierarchy. None. It simply uses the leaf nodes. So each stock or asset is its own risk source. Doesn't take cognizance of groupings, right? Now, your HRP, for example, how many of you have heard of HRP? Only one. So the world quant of the year went to Lopez de Prada that put this algorithm forward. So you should know it, right? It's a really interesting addition to the literature because he said, basically, let's take graph theory and apply it to portfolio optimization. Graph theory and build portfolios using it. That's a phenomenal insight. And how this works very simply, and this is the problem, right? You can add complexity if it helps. He chose the very simple route of saying you have 100 Rand, so you just add, you know, 35 there, 65 there, 20 there, 15 there, et cetera, based on one thing, minimum variance. Because the risk parity, the distribution of your assets there, makes sense because he argues these risk clusters are orthogonal. Well, they're not, right? And also, the other problem is, how do you collapse this structure into a usable two-dimensional object? Because we live in optimization, we require that, right? So how do you collapse the structure into a usable covariance matrix? Well, you just equally weight each of these splits. Again, it's a strong assumption and might not be, it's simple, but it might not be super accurate. So basically, simple approach is you shrink your variance. More optimal approach, and I would argue a more useful approach, is actually build this structure into your covariance matrix. So you have this third dimension, okay? And so a bird's eye view is you take the top part, you have your distinct clusters, you have an optimal outcome for that, and you sequentially dig deeper into this structure. Okay, so you're taking your two-dimensional covariance matrix and making it three-dimensional. Okay. Now, very simply, what this requires is you're going from graph theory to matrix notation. Very simple. We call this a summation matrix. S, and here's our paper now. Okay, so I will try and conclude with this. So HRP is a very simple way of saying, let's take the structure and simply collapse it and have a risk parity allocation to each of the nodes. Well, you can actually generalize this. And one way is, very simple way, is you have intra-cluster optimization, which is flexible. You can have minimum variance allocation, but you can have other optimizer goals to actually allocate assets. Then within cluster, you can similarly have mean variance or minimum variance or max decorrelation or whatever type of optimization goal you want to impose. This is all simple comparatively and easy improvements on Lopez de Prado. And there's literature on that. But what has not yet been introduced, and again, this is to my point of perspective on what is noise and what signal, is how do you collapse this using a loss function? In other words, how do you say this level matters more than that level, from my perspective? And how this loss function is governed can be flexibly done. So we built an algorithm where this can be informed with a global goal in mind. And so this loss function, phi, actually determines the weight of each of these structures. So that at the end of the day, you have a loss function, ignore the math, see the interpretation. While the level-specific intercluster weights are optimized using, for example, MinVol, the meta-optimizer in equation 3.8 ensures that each level contributes only to the extent that it adds meaningful diversification to the portfolio. So I want to diversify across my sources of risk to the point where I'm adding diversification. Or I can use an ERC loss function where it is collapsing the levels to the extent that risk is equally distributed. Two different out goals. Same information, it's raining tomorrow. Is it my wedding or am I, you know, going to the movies? Different interpretation. And this actually allows the modeler the flexibility of governing how this information is used. And think about this. It now allows the noise identification and removal to be flexible to your ultimate portfolio construction goal. This is an obvious omission in this area of research that I find puzzling. So, yeah, we've built this. And effectively, yeah, it's a three-step process. And ultimately, you can either ascertain the weights directly, or you have a shrunken covariance matrix where the complexity of your hierarchical structure is baked into your optimization process. In other words, you are optimally, this is the take-home, optimally diversifying across sources of risk flexibly the way you want it to be done. And so, yeah, there's much more. I'm going to spare you that, but you can, I don't know, take a photo if you like. This is the paper. Yeah, and it's really exciting stuff if you're into that, but I think there's so much more that portfolio optimization can do. It can be more flexibly designed to allow the modeler to do much more and build better, more robust portfolios where the addition of complexity is not done for the sake of it. The addition of complexity is done so that we add our own context to what we want to achieve. Okay. That's my story. I think due to time, I can only take true or false questions, right? Is that the...
I'll allow you to take one question while I ask my tech support to come and load up a very important slide we have for you just before lunch. So one question for Nico, please. I've got the young lady in the striped shirt up front.
Thank you. In terms of application to kind of real-life portfolio selection, how soon do you think that's feasible for kind of widespread use in industry?
So this is already, so we published this in April. It's already being used by a team in London, building their multi-asset portfolio, a team in New York, as well as us building it into our Sanlam Balance Fund. So it's very much we're using this as part of our optimization framework. Remember, no optimizer is utilized as a source of truth. I mean, you probably can, but no one does that, right? It informs decision making. But we're already using this in terms of providing a different perspective. And the fascinating thing is your traditional optimizers provide a perspective, but there's oftentimes it's oftentimes extremely sensitive to your constraints, your assumptions. And so this provides a different perspective and actually informed us quite nicely on a product that we'll be launching at some stage in terms of where the sources of risk are actually properly entering. So in terms of straight application, we have an R package that we wrote and we shared it with those teams that's using it now. We're using it internally, but yeah, I think, and again, it probably ties back, there's much more that you can do with this, but the beauty is the flexibility is provided over to the modeler. And so the ability to actually properly use a dendrogram or your hierarchical structure in actually translating that back to a portfolio design. Because I'm practically minded, right? I don't, the math is a means to an end. I have a goal in optimizing a portfolio for clients. And so, you know, losing sight of that, I think, and to Anne's talk earlier, is it serves no one any purpose. Right, so it's a bit short to explain to you, what this is. But at the end of the day, you're just trying to reduce complexity and reduce noise, and do so in a way where the modeler actually knows how I'm treating noise and what I'm identifying as noise. Okay, lunch.
Thank you. And just before, well, a round of applause, please, for Nicole.